in Lawrence.
Gentlemen, good morning. We have several issues this morning to address. First is renewal of the lease agreement between Sussex County Council and the Laurel Fire Company. That's for space for paramedic station 102, which is located in the Laurel Fire Company's headquarters. The lease renewal is for a period of 1 year, and there's a 3% increase. The amount of the monthly rent is $1,014. As a side note to this, this is the last time we will be able to renew this lease. Laurel has indicated that they kind of want their space back because they've added full-time ambulance staff and they want the space to do that. So we are at the same time looking for a new location in the Laurel area. They have indicated that that they would be agreeable to, if we find one and move out sooner, to terminating the lease at that point, and that's provided for within the body of the lease with a 60-day termination clause. I have a motion that the Sussex County Council approve the lease agreement between Laurel Fire Company Incorporated and Sussex County, Delaware for the use of a portion of their building in the town of Laurel as described therein by Sussex County EMS as paramedic station 102.
Motion, Jim?
So moved.
Second.
It's moved and second that we approve the lease as stated. Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yeah.
Mr. Duke?
Yes.
Mr. Rogers?
Yes.
Yes, motion passed.
Thank you. I have two clinical agreements. One. I'm
sorry. Just a second.
Are you talking to my friend?
We can't hear him.
Oh, okay. Just turn that one on. I'm sorry. I'm kind of losing my voice today.
Push him up or something.
Oh,
aim
him.
Okay, there you go. All right. You're a tall man.
I got started.
Can you hear me now?
There we go.
They can't hear you back? Don't move forward then.
Okay. I have two agreements, one with Nanticoke Memorial Hospital, now we're getting feedback, and the other with BB Medical Center, both of which are virtually identical. They are for the purpose of providing clinical education to our paramedics. This is a five-year renewal. We did the initial one in 2002, as if memory recalls, for 1 year, renewed it for 5 years, and this is the second renewal under essentially the same conditions. This enables our paramedics to go into those facilities to do training, to see patients, to do skills, to sharpen their skills. If they haven't done anything in a long time, we're able to send them into the hospital to kind of refresh things. And it's beneficial for both or all three organizations in this case. I have a motion to that effect that the Sussex County Council approve the affiliation agreements between Nanticoke Memorial Hospital and BB Medical Center and Sussex County, Delaware for the purpose of providing clinical education opportunities to Sussex County EMS paramedics as described therein.
Motion, Jim?
So moved.
Second.
It's been moved and second that we approve the renewal of the agreement with BB, excuse me, Lewis. Yeah, the hospital. Yeah, I'll get it straight here.
Nanticoke and BB.
Yes.
Thank you. Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Duke?
Yes.
Mr. Rogers?
Yes.
Yes. Motion passed.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thanks, Glenn. Jim?
Good morning. I have one item this morning. It's kind of a continuation of our efforts to clean up the Georgetown Air Services leases. The lease that we're talking about this morning is the one that Georgetown Air Services operates their maintenance business with on lot C8 at the airport. It's an 18-year-old lease. Originally started with Sussex Aero Maintenance, Inc. 2002, it was assigned to Georgetown Air Services. And as I said, we've been trying to clean up some of the wording problems and some of the other issues with that lease, along with the other leases that Georgetown Air Services has. In the process of doing that, Georgetown Air Services was approached by Jeff Reed to buy the maintenance assets of the business and continue operating under, confusingly enough, a new business also called Sussex Aero Maintenance, Inc. At that time, we stopped our efforts to clean up the lease and kind of focused on making that arrangement happen.
Going one path.
In doing that, there were different ways of proving that. Mr. Reed has submitted an application in accordance with our minimum standards document, which you approved in 2000, to operate a business at the airport. I've reviewed the application and also the reasons that you could possibly deny that, and I don't see any reason in the minimum standards for you to turn down this application. So I've given that application to Mr. Baker, who has that, and we'll need your approval today for him to operate the business. Now, the way to do that is through a lease agreement for the property. My first choice was just write a brand-new lease. However, I think that would have jeopardized the whole deal. But the original lease does allow an assignment of the lease, and that's what Mr. Janoga has asked for the council to approve, an assignment of the lease. What I'd like to do is have Mr. Reed come up and explain his proposal for the business, and then when he's done, I'll come back and explain the lease amendment that we're proposing.
Morning, Jeff.
Good morning, everybody. Appreciate the time. I myself came across this in a conversation with one of the folks out to the airport, that they were actually looking at maybe closing the maintenance facility, and I thought that would not be good for the airport, the economic value of the area and everything. So in conversation, Garrett, the previous owner, or present owner, as you may say, he and I came to an agreement to go ahead and transfer, and I would take over the operation of the maintenance facility with the three mechanics. There's three mechanics there now. Rob Danzy, who is a Emory Riddle graduate, has he says over 40 years of experience working on airplanes. He does not want to leave this airport. He has promised that he's going to stay on board. He is the FAA approved IA and AMP mechanic on site that does the annual inspections and the maintenance. Then there's a younger fellow by the name of Matt Sager. Matt is a AMP with the FAA and certainly has a lot of good experience learning under Rob Danzy. And then Mike DeLong, who is the third individual there, has recently got his AMP license and is also has about 8 years of experience that he's told me. So with that, decided to go ahead and try that, looking at a way to make this work and to make sure that we have a long future. So I possibly could even hand this down to my son, who now is at Emory Riddle, studying aeronautical science and engineering. So we decided with that that we'd go ahead and take it over.
Any questions for Mr. Reed? Nope. You're good to go, Jeff. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. As I said, the way we propose to get your approval for this is through an assignment of the lease with an amendment or an amendment to the lease to bring the lease up to date and agree to some of the terms that Mr. Reed has asked for. The first, and you've got this in your package there, the first is to add a third 10-year renewal term. Currently, the lease is in its second, or I'm sorry, its first 10-year renewal. It runs out in 2010. There's a second renewal term goes to 2020, and this will add a third one taking out to 2030, which makes it a 40-year lease. The way the lease is written, there's no option for the county to turn that down. It's all on the tenant's request. All he has to do is ask for it. The second thing that we need to do is on the back side of the hangar, between Sussex Aero Maintenance and corporate hangar number 5, we need to have some of that space back that we amended the lease a few years ago to add access to that fifth hangar. That hangar is 10,000 square feet. It's going to accommodate some fairly large airplanes. And with that property situated the way it is, we need about 30 feet on the back side to allow access. There's a drawing in your package that shows the property we're talking about, and it just adds better access to that hangar. When we do that, we're going to proportionally reduce the amount of rent on the lease. Right now, the rent is $7,500. We'll drop that down to $6,744 for this term, and then it goes from $10,500 to $9,442 for the next 10-year term. And then for the final 10-year term, we'll start with a 5% increase, takes to $99.14, and then a CPI increase every year after that with a 3% cap. We also thought it was important that these concessions be tied to jobs. We're asking for at least 4 skilled employees, full-time equivalent employees to be hired by the end of the original lease, which was 2020. And then a fifth one added about 5 years later. Insurance is as it's listed there, and this is as proposed by Mr. Reed. and then workers' compensation according to law. Another thing that we were trying to fix with the original lease was there was wording in there that said along with the property, Sussexero Maintenance would get adequate parking spaces to park airplanes waiting to be fixed or that they own. But there was never any definition of that. So the final part of the amendment is just to define what adequate parking spaces actually is. So those are the terms of the amendment. Unless you have any questions, I have a motion.
Please read the motion, Jim.
Be it moved that the Sussex County Council authorize the assignment of the commercial lease agreement for lot C8 with Georgetown Air Services LLC to Sussexero Maintenance, Inc. Such assignment to include amendment of the lease under the terms presented by Jim Hicken, Director of Sussex County Airport and Industrial Park on February 26, 2008.
Motion, Jim.
So moved.
Second.
Been moved and seconded. We approve the lease as stated. Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Dukes?
Yes.
Mr. Rogers?
Yes.
Yes. Motion passed. Thanks. Back to you again, Dave.
Yeah.
Another subject we beat to death, to say the least.
The next item is pertaining to the source water proposed ordinance. And after our last council meeting, we went back to the source water committee on February 21st last week and met with them and went over some of the proposed revisions. And we also, and I'll just run through these again just to be sure. We did make a change several changes as a result of the input from the county council at the last meeting. The committee has agreed with these changes, but they do have some other concerns, which we'll talk about in a minute. The first item is applicability. Mr. Jones brought up last week the concern about limiting this ordinance to apply to major subdivisions, basically applications for major subdivisions, conditional uses, rezonings, and not apply to individual residential lots. And the concern was that an individual residential lot, say even in one of these newly approved subdivisions, may not have 30 or may eventually exceed 35% impervious surface and all the environmental assessment and all that stuff would kick in. So that was not the intent of the ordinance. The intent was to look at the major projects as a whole. This change is similar to what Kent County has also done with their proposed ordinance, and Denrec was all right with it. Number two was the request by Denrec to copy the impervious surface requirements from excellent recharge areas to wellhead protection areas that we discussed previously. And then number three is the Denrec request that the Denrec and the state geologist must be consulted, although they would not have veto power, so to speak, regarding boundary changes for the wellhead and excellent recharge areas. The county would make the final decision, but we would receive input from the state. And then number four was a result of input from the county council, safe zone impact on adjoining property. The safe zone is either the 100-foot radius or the 20-foot radius area around the well. And the concern was that if a developer or a water company placed a well right on a property line, that would have an effect on the adjoining properties. So, but what we are suggesting is the safe zone must be located entirely on the lands of the applicant or within an area in which the applicant has a valid written and recorded easement. So it would be up to the water company or developer to attain an easement if he affected the adjoining property. So
if he dropped a well down 15 feet from the property line and it was a well over 50,000 gallons, then he would need another 85 feet.
Yes.
So the adjoining landowner would not be responsible for that 85 feet unless he wanted to give him an easement. Is that what you're saying?
Right. We would require an easement for that 85 feet.
But should not the guy driving the well, get that easement before he puts the well in? I mean,
yes.
So then you're making the guy who's adjoining landowner, making it compulsory for him to give him an easement for 85 feet.
No, we're not.
Mm-hmm. That's my question. Are you or are you not?
We're just saying that the person who's putting the well down can locate it entire, so the safe zone is entirely on their own property.
Good, okay.
But if he goes near the line and wants to implicate somebody else's
then land, the adjoining property owner is not responsible.
The adjoiner does not have to give
okay.
an easement.
Good, okay.
I agree 100% because that was one of my concerns, certainly. But what happens if Demrec gives a permit out, and I know they're going to talk to him, and they say, yeah, you can put it there. You know, I do realize that they do tests and all that kind of stuff to certainly see if they're going to get the quality of water.
I think that's a question we need to ask Denrec as to how there could be some cooperation in the granting of permits to see that at least.
Right, I do understand, and that's about the only thing. Being we're not in charge of that part, that we can say
we don't have permitting authority.
Right. Okay. Go ahead, Dave.
Okay. They'll be up in a minute. Maybe we can address that question.
Certainly.
Then the other items were the same as what we discussed at the last council meeting, and the composition of the Source Water Protection Technical Advisory Committee, 10 members, 5 licensed PEs or geologists or hydrologists, instead of what was in the original ordinance, which was the original TAC committee, which is almost half DENREC representatives anyway. And then B, County Council to decide on variances instead of Board of Adjustment. C, variance request charge to be the same as that for Board of Adjustment, which is currently $400. D, the ordinance will not apply to previously approved projects which are under construction or projects which have received preliminary site plan approval. And then E, a definition of impervious surface, which is some are roads, parking lots, etc., and other surfaces that do not allow significant amounts of water to permeate. And those were the ones that we suggested to the committee, and they agreed with those, but they had some other comments, and I'll pass out another page. These were the Source Water Committee additional requests. And these are all basically revisions to their ordinance that they proposed to the county. First, regarding the state wellhead and excellent recharge maps, they suggested that these be referenced by the county but not approved by the county, so that which made sense to us because we didn't feel that we wanted to be in the position to approve every time a change. For instance, if someone comes in and applies for a well permit to DENREC and they, you know, decide on a wellhead protection area, we didn't want to have to come back to the county council and ask for the county council approval of it and whatnot. We don't have the staff that's really experts in that field either. And then 1B is DENREC shall be responsible for providing current up-to-date maps and related information to the county, which we would need, of course, to be able to enforce the ordinance. And then wellhead number 2, wellhead protection area delineated by minimum 60-day time of travel instead of a 5-year time of travel. this would be, again, this is a change that when we talked to DENREC after the source water meeting, DENREC was comfortable with the 60-day time of travel for confined aquifer wells, but not for wells within unconfined aquifers. And they have a little presentation in a minute regarding that subject. And then the technical advisory committee, they suggested a couple changes: 2 members per council person. And then the council will strive to include 1/2 the members instead of require. And also they suggested adding surveyors to that list. And then they also suggested that the ordinance would not apply to any projects until 90 days after the ordinance was enacted, so that an applicant, it wouldn't go into effect until 90 days after it was approved. And then someone coming in the door with an application would have, you know, it wouldn't go into effect until 90 days after the ordinance was approved, basically. That was pretty much it for any application. So the one main concern, again, that DENREC had is regarding the wellhead protection area. We did receive an email from one of the members of the committee who had also felt, after thinking about this after the meeting, that perhaps the 60-day was too limiting. And we asked DENREC to come and give us some examples of what the impact of the 60-day versus the 5-year time of travel would have. And basically, the impact would be on variances. So if someone comes in for a boundary change and they go to the engineering department and then say it eventually comes to the county council, would it be based on a 60-day time of travel or a 5-year time of travel? And with that, I'll ask Mr. Barnt or Mr. Rambo if they'd like to just basically explain some of the examples that they have done to show the differences. There we go.
They can both come down, please. Yeah,
sure.
So that way that we don't have to go back and forth.
You got copies of all this for Lewis.
I'm John Barnt. I'm program manager with the source water program. I'm also a registered professional geologist in the state of Delaware, and I've been involved in this program from its conception. So.
Doug Rambo, I'm the senior hydrologist in the source water assessment and protection program at DENREC.
What you have before you, I guess everybody got a copy of the handout. Doug prepared it yesterday. Sorry, that's all we have to share with you at such short notice, but what Doug did is to look at some of the wellhead protection areas that have currently been delineated in Sussex County using the standard variables that go into the models that are used for these for this type of work. I believe you have in front of you Georgetown.
No, it's Laurel Village Mobile Home Park.
Oh, okay.
And the town of Lewis.
Okay, very good. And the town of Lewis, all right. So what Doug did was look at what we currently have mapped for those areas and also use the same model to see what those areas would look like using a 60-day time of travel rather than a five-year period. The state, and I think Kevin already talked to this a few months ago, Kevin Donnelly, when he addressed the council, we do not believe that for these unconfined wells that are in the shallow aquifer, that these smaller areas are protective, and they're certainly not consistent with what the state's going to be doing under its current regulation of underground tanks or other things that are currently regulated at the state level, nor would it be consistent with other towns and counties throughout the state. I think with the, so I just would just answer questions about this specific example, if you'd like.
You need to explain. What is this? What's the difference between 60 days and 5 years, and how is it impacted on the head of the owner?
Basically, time of travel is just one component that goes into the delineation of a wellhead protection area. When you're looking at groundwater simulation, the time of travel is just that. It's a time frame that the model is based on. There are other components such as aquifer thickness, depth of the well, the pumping rate of the well, the porosity of the sediments, the hydraulic conductivity, the rate at which water moves through the aquifer. All those are taken into consideration. So the models are based more on the geology of the area, and the time component is just that. It's 5 years. Basically, it's what the state has given most of your water suppliers as a time frame in which, if something were to happen at the outer edge of that wellhead protection area, they would have that much time to prepare for contingency planning, such as drilling new wells, adding treatment. That's what the time of travel component allows for.
In other words, you're saying, and I'll and I guess I put a well down. I have to do the dog and pony show, for lack of better words, you know, telling you what we're, how far it's going to go. If I drop a case of oil here, and you have, I mean, for, or you say you've got the, how do you determine how far out you go in 5 years? I mean, is that, or is that with all the other scientific part of it?
Basically, the models, what they do is, it's called reverse particle tracking. It's, you introduce a particle at the well,
okay,
and you basically push it out 5 years from the well. And based on the geologic simulation that goes on for that individual well, it tells you approximately how far out it's going to be in 5 years.
And then that's where the point is. Now, what happens, okay, say it's a half mile down the road.
Mm-hmm.
What happens at that point? I've done all the sales. I've said, okay, it's a half mile down the road. What does it have any impact on the person that's a half mile down the road?
Depending on if they've got their own domestic well, it could have an impact on them. But then again,
I'm talking about like what they can build, what they could do on the lot, and those kind of things. Does that have any impact on the landowner?
They fall within that realm, yeah.
Yeah, the constraint, well, what you have, it's really defined by now, currently what you have in your draft ordinance, which is if, first of all, it has to be a project that's large enough to require, I guess, planning and zoning approval, if that's the right vernacular to use. Second thing, it applies to them only if they exceed that 35% impervious cover threshold.
I understand, but you know, you're going down a half mile down the street, and you're telling that landowner, is that you know, if they cover over the 35% marker, that they can't, they have to do a test, and then come.
Well, what it would require them to do is that when they're designing their stormwater to accommodate that facility, they would also have to include in that the ability to recharge.
Right.
Some of that stormwater back into the ground so that it's not jettisoned off the site and going out into stormwater flow. So they would have to include that in their engineering design for that particular facility.
Because that gentleman put down a well, and he put this, I could be impacted if I owned that land down the road and wanted to develop it. That what you're saying?
Still develop it. You would have to take extra precautions for what you're doing with your stormwater.
But I am impacted because that gentleman. Now,
and we think it mainly would be commercial type of
because of the
35% marker. Right. We don't expect it to affect the residential.
Now, certainly, right. The 60-day limit would certainly be less.
Yes.
So the impact would impact less landowners. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
But you don't like it because there's not enough time involved?
Well, some of your major water companies can get turnaround for water treatment in 60 days. A lot of your smaller businesses, unless they're well connected with certain companies, mm-hmm. May have trouble getting getting a well sunk in 60 days, getting a new treatment facility established in that time period. Depending on what the extent of the contamination is. If it's a volatile organic compound, you're looking at some pretty serious treatment requirements.
And then me as a landowner, because something happened 60 days, you know, or 60, 100, 200, 300 feet away, I got to put a new well in or put treatment, put chlorine, and put right? Is that what you're saying?
That's... Could be one of the results of something that happens in your wellhead area.
I mean, sometimes I do understand the big picture, though, but I just understand that if I'm sitting, the guy that's being impacted on whether it's the landowner or whether it's the guy that has to put a new well in, you know, we're putting a lot of people in jeopardy here sometimes, you know, but they have nothing into the game. You understand?
Yes.
Right? I guess that's where, you know, And I'm very, you know, and I do understand that most time it should be, we've done some things that have certainly corrected some of the things that would minimum impact on the homeowner as individual lots. But can you also ask me that, answer me tonight, the question I had before, if you hand out a permit, and I know that maybe not your part of the game up there, but if you hand out a permit and it does impact somebody, who's responsible? I mean, if you had that permit and said, yeah, that's okay to put it right there, and it drifts over 50 feet over to the guy next door, who's responsible?
Right now, you're talking about if somebody puts a large public water supply well in, and yeah, as far as its implications.
And you guys approved a permit, and it drifts 50 feet over my property.
For the safe zone.
The wellhead area itself is going to be, well, there's the safe zone, which is that 100 foot or 20 foot radius, depending on the type of well it is. And then the larger wellhead area is what you're talking about, I guess.
Well, I'm talking about the 100 foot radius.
Oh, well, that was a good, yeah, we were talking about or whispering about that when you asked that question earlier. I think there would have to be some sort of a memorandum of agreement between our agency and Sussex County. We do something similar with the engineering department here on the management of the six Sussex County landfills, where we do maintain maps and we make some consideration for well permits that are in those areas in coordination with the county. So something similar would have to be worked out. And
certainly, because if you make a mistake and happen to hand out a permit, well, it impacts me. Right. Number one, the guy's got to go out and get an easement from somebody, right?
Right. Well, we would be able to work it into our well permitting application, where any new well permit for Sussex County, when it comes in, that we would be able to put an automatic setback for public wells, 100, depending on the pumping capacity of the well, either 100 or 20 feet from the property line.
Right.
I think there would still need to be some, you know, one-on-one personal communication between us so that
Absolutely.
We can make sure. I mean, when you're approving plans at the county, that would be a new thing that I would think you would request that they put on those maps, is exactly where they plan on getting their public water supply if they're going to be installing a new well.
Okay. Go ahead. I'm sorry. I'll go. Okay. You give a name. Anybody got any other questions?
I do. What we've done is Mr. Griffin revised the ordinance to reflect the changes that were recommended by the Source Water Committee, with the exception of a couple. First, the wellhead protection area. What this draft reflects is a 60-day time of travel for larger wells in the confined aquifer area, and a 5-year time of travel in the unconfined aquifer. Our thought is, if you know this, first of all, this draft, if introduced, would have to go to a public hearing, and then if there was changes that are less restrictive, then we wouldn't have to, those changes could be made after the public hearing. The other two minor items, we did not add the surveyors to the list on the technical advisory committee because a survey is already required, which we noticed after the committee meeting. But that, again, that could be added if you wanted to add that now or at a later time. Or the ordinance, and also the ordinance would not apply until 90 days after the application is made to planning and zoning. We did not add that, although again that could be amended with the ordinance. So again, the committee recommended revising their original ordinance with the changes noted on the two pages. This ordinance reflects those changes except for the items I just mentioned, and again, if this was introduced, it would take we would still have a public hearing, I think 3 weeks from now. Robin, would the public hearing be 3 weeks from now? Okay, and then the council could vote on it after a public hearing.
Question, gentlemen?
Here's
It is on the agenda for discussion and introduction, but I mean, we've been beating this thing up. I don't know if everybody wants to look at it for a week and put it back on.
What are we going to do down here, Finley? What's this down here under old business?
Well,
possible introduction.
Yeah, okay. Yep, we can move back. I'm sorry. I didn't see that part.
At our last council meeting, we talked about the possibility of voting on the original ordinance, which we already held a public hearing for, which the council deferred on the end of December because we were...
So this is back on the original. I think there was some comment made, like just put something on so we can just approve it or something, and this is probably what the response is.
Yes or no.
So if we agree now up here, what we're talking about right now, to reintroduce something, what if we go down here and approve it?
If you introduce the new ordinance, then you won't take action on the...
You hope we won't.
One that's already been held.
Wait, you hope we won't, right?
If you don't introduce a new ordinance, someone said that I'd like to have the possibility of at least going back to the original ordinance.
You can still not take any action on the one that George is talking about down further on the agenda and leave it sitting out there. And introduce this one, so you have both versions, for lack of better words, and you do whatever you want.
Well, I mean, you've already held the public hearing on the other one. If you're not going to take action on it, you really need to
vote down.
Let's pass both of them.
You need to vote down.
Well, I wouldn't put it past this group, but we could.
Need to withdraw the old.
And everybody's happy.
Okay, I got you.
We've heard from Denrec. We're done with them.
Yep. Yeah. Are you questions for them? Go ahead, sit down, guys.
Can I ask if there's either member of the source water committee here that they'd be given the opportunity to speak?
What?
I don't know if we want to open that back up.
Does this meet the majority of the resource water committee, the new one?
It includes everything except those two or three things Mr. Baker told you about, which was making surveyors part of the committee, and it does not include delaying the implementation until after 90 days.
And then the one regarding the wellhead protection area that we just talked about, it includes Denrec's, what Denrec said they could live with, a 60-day time of travel in the confined aquifer, which is recommended by the committee, but a 5-year time of travel in the unconfined aquifer.
Right. So, in layman's language, tell me what's a confined and unconfined.
Confined is the deeper aquifer. The unconfined is the shallower, which probably most typical wells draw their water from.
Most household, anyway.
Okay.
More towns, well, it depends. Some towns have both. Basically, just to seal the clay is basically, for layman's term, the clay layer seals off anything from getting through. That's about a layman's term.
I know it's risky to ask him to come up because it could turn into a spectacle, but Mr. Kramer is on the committee. He's attended all the meetings. I mean, I'd ask the president. If he wants.
I don't really have any problem as long as...
My question is, he doesn't represent the committee.
He is a member of the committee.
He is. That's all he is. He's a member.
One person.
He may give a minority view, for all I know.
Who knows who knows what
we'll
is...
give you a couple minutes, Dan. It's
crazy.
Please be polite or I'll never be able to call you up again.
My name is Dan Kramer. You got a question?
Yeah. was this recommendation by the committee unanimous?
No.
Okay. What was the discussion and concerns of the committee, briefly, if you could?
Before I go that route, I want to do one thing. There was something said about the 60-day of travel. Now, let me explain something to you. Today, we got a well guy sitting right back there, and he knows more about wells than anybody in this building.
I'd run, Rodney.
Anybody. Now, let's take a tractor trailer. Comes down the road and has a wreck, and immediately spills hundreds of gallons or 1,000 gallons of gas. Now, guess what happens? Man, phones are ringing from top to bottom. What's the chance of that getting into that well 60 days from now? None.
So your point is that the five-year
travel... Five-year time of travel's got to go regardless of whether it's in the deep well or the shallow well. It doesn't matter.
Okay, it's excessive. And that is one of the recommendations that your committee made, that we go to a 60-day time of travel.
Right. We didn't discuss whether it was in the aquifer, confined. Deep aquifer, or the big, you know, the...
Confined or unconfined.
Right,
what is the danger in us, and I don't know if the votes are here, passing the original recommendation by the committee and then reintroducing amendments to that?
Absolutely nothing. That would be the ideal right to go. Because right now you have that on the agenda.
Right.
First of all, you've introduced that thing. You've held a public hearing.
Okay.
So therefore, if you either got to pass it or... not pass it, one or the other.
Is there anything...
You've got to kill that ordinance.
Okay.
Because you've got two ordinances here if you introduce this one.
Is there anything in the ordinance that we've already vetted and heard at public hearing, is there anything in there that the committee really wants in or really doesn't want in based on the review you had last week?
First of all, the only reason this is coming down the pike is because of DENREC. It has nothing to do... If it was the original ordinance, nothing... But why is this back on the agenda? Not because we wanted the original one.
But we have to respect DENREC to the degree of at least considering those points.
Right,
but my concern is, as is I think the county, we could rehash this thing for another 6 months.
Exactly right.
On the new one. Right. So, but is there anything that the committee discovered, even though they recommended the original ordinance?
Did they discover
anything after taking a second look at it that they really wish was in it or not in it? Yes or no?
I truly can't answer that because there were some of us there didn't want the thing changed on certain things. First of all, why was it that last meeting, which is what, 2 weeks ago, you guys were handed an ordinance?
Right.
You guys looked at that ordinance. That ordinance was handed to Dave Baker and said, take it back to the committee and Hal Godwin. We didn't get that, we got a copy of it. But guess what? The night we walked into that meeting, we had a completely new one.
Is that right?
Hang on a second. Why? I would have had no objection to them coming in and saying, hey guys, here's some ideas. But they came in and says, we put it in there. And furthermore, they told us we couldn't even, we were just supposed to discuss it. And then if we had an objection, then we come to the public hearing. Well, wait a minute. What's our job as a committee?
To make a recommendation, and recommendation was...
Well, they wouldn't have
occurred. Got a recommendation.
But let's you are on. Speaking as a minority member of that committee, because I've talked to some on the committee.
At this point, right, I understand there are certain things that we didn't vote for or did vote for.
If we pass the first ordinance today,
right,
would you support these amendments to it later?
At a later date? Some of them, yeah, some of them, but not all of them. Not all of them.
We'll never... All right.
But some of them I did, yeah.
Okay.
I think you ought to pass the old one.
What the committee recommended was, at the end of the meeting, they voted, I think it was 5 or 6 to 1, to reject the old and approve or recommend a new ordinance with these recommendations that are on the two pages.
Other than the possibly the 60-day versus the 5-year.
That's the main difference in this ordinance that Mr. Griffin just worked on that we just passed out. And he worked from the original ordinance approved by the committee. And
which
the only,
had the five-year travel in it?
If I'm not mistaken. Yes, it had the five-year travel in it.
Versions here that I had to go back and look.
It had the 5-year travel in it, but what we presented to the committee last week include the comments from the county council regarding no major subdivisions and whatnot for applications and the safe zone impact on adjoining properties.
Okay. Any other questions for Mr. Baker? Any other questions for the representatives from DENREC? Okay.
We're going to analyze till we're paralyzed.
Gentlemen, does everybody want to look at it?
Sure. Of course.
Okay. Are you going to introduce it? Just look at it. What are you going to do?
I'll introduce it.
Now we're going to pass it.
There we go. That's all right. You go ahead and pass it. I mean, I feel like that show on TV, like I mentioned the other day, about fifth graders.
Introduce a new one. Let's go.
It's been introduced.
It's been introduced. On. Okay, let's keep moving.
Let's move.
All right. Mike?
Thanks, Mr. Cole.
Something got to get, I mean, unbelievable. Embarrassing. It is embarrassing. I didn't, and those questions, I don't know what they meant.
Good morning. I have two items on my agenda this morning.